Good morning, Professor.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Okay, this is what I'm encouraged to do. I wanted to do, and we just definitely not going to have enough time to get everything in, even with the extra. Okay. I want to do what you wanted to do, the reparation talk. Let's start doing math. What would we – I mean, this is how it would – just outline it, how it would go. That's what I'm interested in. We'll talk about how it would be set up and everything. We got time, okay?
Okay. Right,
here we come.
What's up next? Visit the Liberty Radio Network program guide to find out at shows.lrn.fm. That's shows.lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona. All right, we got a special addition, an extra half hour. You know, we had him scheduled for top of the hour. I go, no, let's get him as soon as we can because I got lots of stuff to talk about. This is Wilmer J. Leon III, Ph.D. He's a political scientist whose primary areas of expertise are the prison industrial complex and voter disenfranchisement. Dr. Leon was a lecturer in the political science department at Howard University in Washington, D.C. for 11 years, where he taught courses at both the undergraduate and graduate levels in national government. Introduction to Political Science, Introduction to Black Politics, and Judicial Process. Dr. Leon is a recognized scholar and much sought-after speaker and writer, etc., and nationally syndicated columnist and published here and there and every kind. You know, we got skills with Wilmer J. Leon III, Ph.D. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you so much for the invitation.
Okay, now this is what the deal we got. See, we went through a whole hour of, you know, ouch quit it, and what kind of got down to reparations. You know, I'm just going, okay, so the whole thing is we built up to where, you know, the black man has been oppressed for, you know, whatever, but alongside with the white man and red man and me man. I mean, you know, I'm they, them, those are oppressing me. That's, you know, my vote. So what we want to do is the main issue that we didn't really get to discuss that much was that the professor wants to have and advocates for that there should be a discussion determining a dollar amount for reparations to a black community. Now, we had reparations in my lifetime. A lot of the younger people in the audience don't remember. And I got to get details. But as I recall, the Japanese internment camps in World War II were a thing. You know, it's people, law-abiding, American-supporting, flag-waving Americans, because you look different, boy, get in the freaking camp. And they, I guess, made their cultures different. They made the best of it, whatever. But years went by, they're in camps, and all their property was taken. So I'm, that was the dark days of America. So to answer that and kind of be done with it, they finally, and it was a big issue for long, was reparations. You know, got to pay them off. Well, I don't know how much is too much on that. I don't know if you can put a dollar amount on that, but they each got, the professor might be able to help me, $30,000, $40,000 or something. I don't even know who got it. Was it
20,000.
Okay, and did it go to their children at all or people that died, or is just if you were still living, you got 20,000?
There were 82,000 Japanese Americans or their heirs.
Man, that's it.
Who received about $20,000, and then there were also, and I did not know this, there were also some Latin American Japanese who also received money. The whole program came to about $1.6
billion. Okay, $1.6 billion, and that was for 80-something. How many?
82,000.
How many slaves were there prior to the emancipation, the Civil War?
I don't have that number in front of me. I could probably, in fact,
I mean, was it hundreds of thousands, millions? I mean, I don't know.
It was hundreds of thousands.
Okay, so it's more than 80-something thousand, okay? So,
oh, yeah.
All right, so this is what we're looking at. If we're going to determine there is something due, okay, how do you determine that, and who's it due from? I didn't do it, you know? Yeah, check your white privilege, okay? So I'm wondering, if we do the dollar amount, then I'm going, okay, well, is there any subtractions? You know, do you take stuff off? You know, like, I don't know, affirmative action, welfare payments. Is there some, okay, and we'll subtract this from the total, or it gets added to? So we got to determine these things. And this is the one thing that Professor wanted. There's a bill that is to even look at it. But then once you look at it and you come up with determine a number, well, then it's like you owe it already. You already determined that you owe it. So I'm going, okay. And then you kept emphasizing the government. And I'm going, God, where do you think they get the money? You know, who's going to have to pay for this thing? They just pile it onto the debt on my grandkids. So that's what I want. So let's start with the criteria. And I'll just make notes here, write it down, of how we would determine reparations. And then once you start down this road, you know it's going to be Native Americans, man. They're like, you want to talk reparations? I'll give you reparations. Manhattan's ours, okay? So I want to start there. How would we even start listing how we would determine a dollar amount?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, this is a very serious conversation. And I think it has to be understood that reparations are owed. You made the comment that
to whom and
well, wait a minute. You made the comment that that whites and others have been oppressed, and that is true. But Du Bois made a comment very, very profound when he said, many people have been enslaved, but none of them were property. So what we first have to understand is the fact that what the differentiation between Africans enslaved in America and other oppressed people in this country or around the world is the fact that Africans in America were dehumanized and considered property. And that is a very, very important distinction that has to be made. According to the Transatlantic Slave Trade Database, between 1525 and 1866, there were 12.5 million Africans that were shipped to the New World. About 10.7 million survived the Middle Passage and made their way to North America, the Caribbean, and South America. And that's not counting the number that were bred here in the United States. I look at Georgetown's model as a place to start the conversation. The Jesuits that run Georgetown Georgetown University was on its way to bankruptcy. The Jesuits got approval from Rome to sell, I think it was about 200 slaves, in order to keep Georgetown University afloat. Georgetown University now has an endowment of $1.5 billion. $1.5 billion. They went from just about bankruptcy to a net worth of an endowment of about $1.5 billion. Now, they're talking about reparations for the descendants of those enslaved Africans. And they're talking about tuition remission. They're talking about preferential admission, which is a very good start. Personally, I believe since they are able to identify who a good number of these descendants are, they need to pay those descendants. And they need to figure out how much those enslaved Africans were sold for. They need then to calculate, very simply, present-day value. And then based upon understanding what present-day value is, they then could negotiate a number.
Okay, present-day value of what? Slaves? I mean, they're selling them in the streets of Libya now again.
I mean, come on now. This is very simple.
No, we're going into break. We're going into break, man. Can't hear you over the music. So what we're going to go ahead and do is talk about that very issue, you know, when we come back. Because I'm like, you know, the natives, they didn't even get valued as property. You know, I'm at least we had that number to go with. You can see it's going to be complex. We'll be right back.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
From... Yeah, covering the secrets, exposing the lies. Let's see what we can do here on this one. This is, you know, it's really a good point. You know, that's one thing that human beings selected. I guess it's probably more common throughout history, but to be property, to be somebody else's property, which, you know, for a libertarian, what's the first thing we go? Whose body is this? Am I my own property? And you know, and we start everything from there. Well, now we have a group of people that were enslaved. I mean, literal enslavement. And we've had reparations that's gone out to, you know, the Japanese Americans. I mean, $20,000 for BMT, that doesn't seem like, you know, it's kind of, you know, got off cheap money. But we need to determine, you know, if there are reparations to be had, to whom, by whom. And it's I'm going, hey man, I didn't do it, you know, so I, yeah, but you benefited from, yeah, I'm, so we're going to talk about that, how you determine this and who's responsible. So Professor, let's go ahead. I'm going to let you make your case, but you know, keep in mind, we got to come up with a dollar amount. We got to come up with to whom and under what conditions and how is this negotiated and by. I just want it to stop. You know what? And like Iceland did, the government just dissolved. They go, you know, we don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, somebody, yeah, those guys owed you probably. You know, we're picking a new parliament from the phone book and we're starting over. Now what? You know, America might be doing a start over here. So let's go ahead and do that. One, was there damage done? Yeah, I think that's pretty much, you know, but the damage was not limited to just the black community. I feel damaged by slavery. You know, I mean, I was not there, nor were a lot, you know, blacks that are alive now. They weren't there. It's just, you know, who benefited more and how do you determine that? And I just see a lot of variables here that we need to start plowing through. What would be the first one? Well, I'm sorry. I didn't have the button pushed. Okay, go ahead.
All right, let me narrow down a couple of numbers because I honestly did not realize that that's what we were going to be talking about.
Yeah, I know.
About,
I apologize. I didn't even know. I just saw on the schedule last night that you were. I go, oh yeah, well, man, I should have known that. Oh, we're going to have some fun. So I appreciate you doing this, but I know this is kind of what you wanted is to have this discussion. So let's have it.
Right. Yeah. So the number I gave initially when we look at the 12.5 million that were shipped to the New World, of those 12.5 million, somewhere between 388 to 450,000 actually landed here in what is now the United States. So that takes us from 12.5 million that were actually exported from the continent to how many actually arrived here on the shores of the colonies, somewhere between 388,000 to 450,000.
Wow, and that's 12 million that slaves that were somewhere. Where the hell did they go?
Oh, they went to Brazil. They went to the Caribbean. They went to other places in South America. I mean, slaves from the continent of Africa were shipped, again, all over what was considered at that time to be the New World. In fact, let me see if I can quickly. But anyway, again, the Caribbean, South America, and the colonies are pretty much where, and Cuba were pretty much where these slaves landed.
So you know, I want to inject here, people that kind of get a feel for this. In 1705 to 1715, 20, around in there, there was a pirate rebellion. It was the everybody's a pirate. If you're not under the king's whip, you're a pirate. Well, these were a lot of escaped slaves. You know, they were criminals. They were people that were on the outside or poor, and they wanted a pirate republic out of Nassau, Bahamas. And there's a series on Showtime. It was called Black Sails, and I highly recommend it. And what it was is they wanted not to have slaves. They wanted this old European aristocracy, we rule you mentality, not to make it to the New World. That was what the battle was about. That was what this. So black slaves had, you know, congregated. There was like, you know, head north or go to Nassau, depending on when it was. So this has been, you know, you want integration and fighting for not being ruled, you know, that'll get people together. So I just wanted to inject that while you were looking at your stuff.
So the data also shows that most of the 42 million members of the African-American community have descended from these up to 450,000 Africans.
Okay, now what's the number you said? Descendants number 14 million, you said?
42 million.
42 million. Okay, big number. Direct descendants and line, you know, got blood of.
Right, exactly.
They may have some blood of, you know, plantation owner too, but I mean, at least they got, you know, the African blood in them, you know, going forward from slaves. Would you, and okay, well, let's go ahead and get the numbers out and then we'll determine how we're going to do this. All right, so we got 12.5 million left Africa under chains. We have 400,000, about, let's just say 400,000 to the United States. 42 million are descendants of that 400,000. I got it right so far?
Yes, except there's a number that we have to determine, which I haven't been able to put my finger on yet. That was some of the research that I was doing in anticipation of a conversation later, and that is how many were bred here, because what happened when the Constitution was ratified, that ended the importation of slaves after 20 years, I think 1880, but that didn't end slavery. So slaves were bred domestically, which is another number separate from those that were brought here from Africa.
Okay, I got to ask you this question. It just popped into my head. When you say, because I vaguely remember this. One, slaves were counted as two-thirds of person for, you know, Constitution, for congressional representation of the states. And you get,
right.
I'm surprised they.
Three-fifths of a person.
All right, three-fifths. I'm surprised they give them. You know, counted them as any. I mean,
that wasn't as a benefit. That wasn't, now understand the logic. That was not as a benefit to the slave. That was a compromise because what Virginia wanted to do, because Virginia was the largest slaveholding state at the time, colony. What Virginia wanted to do was they wanted to count all of the residents of the Commonwealth for representational purposes.
So they can get more congressmen.
Exactly. The other states, other colonies said no, because those people are, most of those people in Virginia are free. So we're not going to give you representation for people who aren't going to be represented. And so the compromise was, we'll count each of those slaves as three-fifths of a person. That was not doing any benefit.
Now, was it to count each black person, or they had to be designated as slaves to get three-fourths?
Well, if we read the Constitution,
No.
The word slave is nowhere in the Constitution.
Well, let's take a look at that, because this is one thing that I'm thinking. You know, if they're doing portions of people, it's just I don't see. Do you see the U.S. Constitution as a anti-slavery document? I mean,
not at all.
It was like, hey, we're not going to import slaves anymore. We're just going to breed them. So we're like anti-slave document. That's what sounds government-y.
No, it wasn't. It was nowhere near. First of all, here's what the three-fifths compromise said. Representatives and direct taxes shall be apportioned among the several states which may be included within this union according to their respective numbers, which shall be determined by adding, now here are the descriptions, the whole number of free persons, including those bound to service for a term of years, those be white indentured servants, and excluding Indians not taxed, and three-fifths of all other persons. So that was only slaves.
So that the three-fifths was all slaves. Other persons.
Slaves.
I mean, what they said is all other whatever.
All other persons.
See, I'm just wondering, that's interesting to me, is because they have to designate them a person. I mean, the Constitution was, not an anti-slavery or a freedom document. It was a negotiation. So we're going to negotiate, some more when we come back and find out, I just want to get our heads around what the issue is, and how we might even discuss it. Well, it's going to be simple when we come back. Professor Leon. Wilmer Leon III. We'll be right back.
If you're looking for work, the person you...
Okay, we don't come back in until 6 after. This is the top of the hour news break. It's 8 minutes. So we'll just go ahead and plan on. We'll take a break, come back at 6 after, and we'll hit right into it. This is going good. I'm glad we started early, because I wanted to get some basis here before we started getting going. All right, we'll be right back.
More Declare Your Independence is coming up next, live, after the news, here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.
From Keene in the Shire, the Liberty Media capital of the world, this is Darryl W. Perry, host of FPP Radio News for Wednesday, April 26th, 2017. Silver is trading at $17.62 per ounce. Gold is valued at $1,265 per ounce. Bitcoin is trading at 1.7 cents, and the average price of Bitcoin is $1,279. Antiwar.com reports Turkish warplanes carried out a series of coordinated attacks against U.S. allied Kurdish forces in both northern Iraq and northeastern Syria on Tuesday, killing more than 20 people, including at least 18 troops loyal to the Kurdish YPG, and pounding the area around the Iraqi city of Sinjar. Attacks within Syrian territory targeted the city of Derik in Hasaka province, targeting Kurdish military posts. The U.S. arms and heavily backs the YPG, something Turkey has long complained about. The strikes reflect long-standing Turkish threats to move against the Syrian Kurds. But it's not just Syria. The strikes around Sinjar in Iraq were after PKK fighters in the area, with Turkey's President Erdogan insisting that he will never allow Sinjar to become a PKK base of operations. The PKK established a presence in Sinjar during the expulsion of the Islamic State and have been largely welcomed by the local Yazidi population. The attacks on Sinjar also killed Iraqi Kurdish Peshmerga forces, who were supposed to be Turkey's allies. Erdogan insisted that the killing of the Peshmerga was unintentional and that he regretted that they got swept up in the strikes. Turkey's interventions in Syria have become commonplace, and strikes against PKK targets in Iraq's far north were also not uncommon. This is something else, however, with more strikes centering around populated areas and against specifically anti-the Islamic State fighters.
For nearly 40 years, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has been a trusted source for buying and selling precious metals like gold and silver. They also take Bitcoin for precious metal purchases and have permanently removed the minimum purchase amount for all orders paid in the digital currency. Call Roberts & Roberts today for knowledgeable advice on buying and selling precious metals and a forward-thinking approach to new technologies. 800-874-9760 or visit online at rrbi.co.
Reuters reports a U.S. judge on Tuesday blocked President Donald Trump's executive order that sought to withhold federal funds from so-called sanctuary cities, dealing another legal blow to the administration's efforts to toughen immigration enforcement. The ruling from U.S. District Judge William Orrick III in San Francisco said Trump's executive order targeted broad categories of federal funding for sanctuary governments and that plaintiffs challenging the order were likely to succeed in proving it unconstitutional. The Republican president's moves on immigration have galvanized legal advocacy groups, along with Democratic city and state governments, to oppose them in court. The administration suffered an earlier defeat when two federal judges suspended executive orders restricting travel from several Muslim-majority countries. The federal government has appealed those decisions. Rince Priebus, Trump's White House chief of staff, told reporters the administration was taking action to appeal the ruling, adding the idea that an agency can't put in some reasonable restrictions on how some of these monies are spent is something that will be overturned eventually. Priebus added, it's the Ninth Circuit going bananas, referring to the West Coast Judicial District where the judge ruled. Priebus added, we'll win at the Supreme Court level at some point. The U.S. Department of Justice said in a statement they would follow existing federal law with respect to sanctuary jurisdictions, as well as enforce conditions tied to federal grants. Sanctuary cities generally offer safe harbor to undocumented immigrants and often do not use municipal funds or resources to advance the enforcement of federal immigration laws. The Trump administration contends that local authorities endanger public safety when they decline to hand over for deportation undocumented immigrants arrested for minor crimes. The executive order by Trump, who made cracking down on undocumented immigration a cornerstone of his presidential campaign, directed such funding to be restricted once the Homeland Security Department determines what constitutes a sanctuary city. Santa Clara County, which includes the city of San Jose and several smaller Silicon Valley communities, sued in February, saying Trump's order was unconstitutional. San Francisco filed a similar lawsuit. In his ruling, Orrick said the language of the order made it clear that it sought to withhold funds beyond law enforcement. Orrick wrote, if there was any doubt about the scope of the order, the president and attorney general have erased it with their public comments. The judge cited comments from Trump calling the order a weapon to use against jurisdictions that disagree with his immigration policies. Orrick added, federal funding that bears no meaningful relationship to immigration enforcement cannot be threatened merely because a jurisdiction chooses an immigration enforcement strategy of which the president disapproves. This has been FPP Radio News, online at fppradio.com.
It was on this day in 1982 that the first roller skating while carrying a boombox member of Congress was elected when James Sugar Boots Franklin narrowly won New York's 8th congressional seat. Franklin's victory was a watershed moment at the time, signaling that America's burgeoning population of boombox carrying roller skaters had finally gained mainstream acceptance.
We prove Congress isn't just for suits and crew cuts. Say hello to the slickest legislator on 8 wheels, James Sugar Boots Franklin.
Franklin was an unlikely pioneer, a street-smart skater who admitted to being more concerned with impressing honeys with his silky smooth moves than with politics.
Franklin began organizing boombox-carrying roller skaters, advocating for basic rights like roller skate-accessible ramps in government buildings and protected street lanes where they could lay down cones for some sweet slaloming.
Just because we like to roll it out and have a smooth, fluid style that cannot be denied doesn't mean we aren't Americans. Yeah!
This is the Onion News Network.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! America!
Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, and from the BEA Utiful Studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. Well, we have Professor Wilmer Leon on, and we're going to be talking about, we already started the conversation. He's a political scientist. His primary areas of expertise are the prison industrial complex and voter disenfranchisement. Well, we're talking about black reparations, you know, for the black. How would you determine black? Let's start off right there. Are we just going slave and slave descendants? Or is it have, I mean, how much blood does that have to do? Or are they required to be black? I mean, you know, and what level is enslavement? There's indentured servants. Heck, Paul Revere was an indentured servant, you know, paid for his way over here and became a silversmith. So I'm wondering, let's designate a slave. They were on some list. Or how do you even determine that? You got to help me out, Professor.
Well, we can start with Edward Baptist's book, The Half Has Never Been Told, where he does, and I'll hold it up so you all can see it. He does some incredible research in terms of this issue. Before I answer your question, let me give you a couple more numbers. The Constitution was ratified in 1789. Slavery was the importation of slaves was allowed to exist for 20 years after the Constitution was ratified, so that takes us to 1809. From 1809 till the 13th Amendment, which abolished slavery except for commissions of a crime, was 1865, so that's 56 years. So from 1809 till slavery was abolished is another 56 years. According to Edward Baptist, there were, in 1860, there were 3,953,760 enslaved people in the United States.
Okay, I'm sorry, I was writing this down. What was that number?
3,953,760 enslaved people in the United States.
Okay, we'll say 4 million because I like round numbers.
Right.
All right, go.
Okay, now, to your question, I don't really know that the answer to your question is really relevant to the issue, and here's why.
Okay.
Because
what was the question
about how do you define black and okay. whether or not we're dealing with, and here's why the difference between the enslaved Africans and then Africans in America and the Japanese is the racism is the systemic racism and prejudice and bigotry that blacks have been subjected to since we arrived on these shores in 1619.
Okay, now I gotta put a whoa on that. That is, I mean, every ethnic group. I'm the Japanese. Hey, man, we were enslaved, you know, too. We were interned. Hell, we weren't even, you know, didn't even get to, you know.
They were never considered property.
Yeah, but they don't see the difference.
I don't care if they don't see the difference. I'm telling you the difference, and the difference is real. And that difference makes all of the difference.
But what is the difference? See, I'm, you know, and you're saying we've been.
You don't understand the difference.
No. I want to make sure we're. I want to make sure we clarify the difference. You can't just make a statement saying, you know, we've been the racism against, you know, because of all of a sudden it equals racism later. You got the Irish. You have the Native Americans. You got the Japanese.
Let me give you an example of the difference. The Virginia Slave Code from 1868 asked the question whether or not a slave master could be convicted of murder for killing a slave.
Right.
And the answer I won't read the exact text. The answer was no, because
property.
No one in there, because a slave master could not be considered to have committed murder. Because he could not have formulated what's called in legal terms the mens rea. He could not have intended to kill a human because no one in their right mind would destroy their own estate. So that's a huge difference between killing a black slave and killing an interned Japanese American.
You know, I you look at the Chinese that came over. I mean, I don't want to diminish your point. I'm just trying to be clear. Well, I mean, if you got Yickwo versus Hopkins, okay? The 14th Amendment is just done. You had the Civil War. You got the 13th Amendment. You know, you can't enslave people, indentured servants can't. And then you had the 14th Amendment. Everybody's equal. And then you have Chinese Americans, ancient Chinese secret laundry in San Francisco. And then, you know, the locals there, they said, nope. These Chinese are you know, muscling in on our laundry business. And we just passed a law that says, if you're Chinese, you can't have a laundry. Well, Chinese, he didn't read the memo, and he did not, and they arrest him. So they goes all the way to the Supreme Court, and it said, and they made the argument, he doesn't have constitutional rights because he's a subject of the Emperor of China, and he's just nothing. He's not even property. He's just to be ignored and comply with this racist law that they had. So
No. You are injecting more to that, because by saying that he's a subject of the Emperor of China is not saying that he's not a human being. What it's saying is he's not an American citizen, he doesn't have standing, and cannot sue an American court. That's a big difference.
No. They, you know, my thing is the Constitution, this is what the ruling came down as, is that all people, persons, individuals, human beings breathing in and out, have equal protection under the law. That's how you get in immigrants going to public schools and getting access to all kinds of stuff, you know, because this concept is that the Constitution says, you know, human beings, you're like people, all right? Well, they go, there's no citizenship requirement for you to be protected under our laws until baby Bush goes to Afghanistan and you got...
No, but you can go back to Plessy versus Ferguson where Taney says that the reason that Homer Plessy could not sue was because black people having been slaves had no rights that white people were bound to protect, and therefore had no standing to sue in court.
Okay, no. We can argue. I just don't want to be so myopic that it only affects black slaves. This mindset of the crown determines who gets to have access and who doesn't to the court and equality and whatever, no matter, even when they pass the 13th and 14th Amendment, you have Chinese Americans were not considered people. They didn't want them to do it. So it's not.
They were not considered citizens. It's not that they weren't considered human. Because they said they were subjects of the emperor.
Okay.
What
they were trying to do is to say the only way you get human rights protected in America is if you're a U.S. citizen, and that's not what the Constitution said. It's human beings.
But that doesn't mean they weren't human. They weren't considered human.
That's my point. The Constitution says if you're human, you have human rights. Period. So let me finish this one point.
Okay.
When you have
does it say that in the Constitution? I'd like for you to show me that. But go ahead.
Well, 14th Amendment, the Equal Protection Clause.
Oh, the 14th Amendment. Oh, okay.
So then we go to Afghanistan. You have some young kid says, you know what? I'm going to fight for Taliban and my faith, and I'm in Afghanistan. It was Walker Lee, whatever his name was. Jeff, I can't remember. And they have a battle. They get him. Hey, it's a white boy from America. You know, what do we do with this guy? Well, that's where the enemy combatant thing came from. We're going to strip him of his U.S. citizenship so we can beat him into submission. Well, didn't we already have that discussion? You can't do that.
Did you know you can listen to LRN.FM via our free-to-air satellite channels? We have channels over nearly all of North America and much of Africa. All you need is an affordable receiver and a dish as small as 30 inches. There are no monthly fees. Learn more at sat.lrn.fm. Plus, if you are a broadcaster or want to be one, this is a good delivery method for our content. See our coverage maps and get details at sat.lrn.fm. That's sat.lrn.fm. sat.lrn.fm.
I've been told no in many different ways.
I give you an order and you're going to obey it.
Who told you to go this way?
You can't do that and you have to leave here.
You cannot bring Simon to the rally.
Walk with me.
I'm comfortable here, actually.
Whoa, excuse me.
Hey,
who do you think you are?
Excuse
me.
There is no video or audio allowed in this office.
No, I have work today. This is...
You ain't gonna make...
Wait a minute. Now. Wait a minute.
Whoa.
Hey! Oh, my
God! Unbelievable!
Why are you running from me?
Because you're scared of me!
What am I being detained for?
You're being served.
What is this?
You're being served.
What is this?
Bureaucrats have a funny way of telling people no. That's the sound of the men
working on the chain. Derek J's Victimless Crime Spree. Watch it for free and order the Director's Cut DVD at victimlesscrimespree.com.
You're listening to the best liberty-oriented audio streamed around the clock, on the air, and online. This is the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Okay. This is what we're going to do. We got some stats here. We're getting into how we're going to classify what kind of money reparation is due for the slave trade in America. We had slaves. I mean, they're starting to trade human beings as slaves in Libya again right now, thanks to America. All right. So one thing I want retribution for being black or having slave blood. I want to make sure that we're clear on this as we're going through this, Professor. It's, let's go through the numbers. 12.5 million people left in chains, Africa. 400,000 made it to the colonies. The rest of, is Brazil and Caribbean and died and, cane fields, Cuba and whatever. But say 400,000. I mean, it's varying band of numbers, just round and round here. 400,000 in the U.S., 42 million people have been descendants of slaves or have slave blood in them. And then there were, of course, there were people that were born into slavery here, because when the Constitution was ratified in 89, it counted slaves as, three-fifths or something, a portion.
Three-fifths of a person.
So that you could do the apportionment of Congress. So the Congress, they wanted you to get so many congressmen, based on your population. So they didn't want to, they don't count because they don't vote and they don't count. Yeah, well, they do count. Ouch, quit it, back and forth, and they negotiated it's three-fifths. The thing is that, does that make the Constitution an anti-slavery document? Well, it said after 20 years, you can't import slaves in this country anymore, which I'm sure they did. But, there would still be limitation. Well, if you were born into slavery here in America, you're born slave. Not great history, for
America. Don't forget the fugitive slave provision that was written into the Constitution that said anyone escaping to a free territory or colony can be returned rightfully to their owner.
Which there were a lot of bounty hunters that did exactly that.
That was in the Constitution.
Anti-slavery document. Not. Okay. So then you had born into slavery. Now you had the 20 years goes by, but not importing, but it wasn't until after the Civil War that it was illegal to have slaves. And then you came up with
that was January 31st, 1865.
Okay, now that's one thing where, a lot of libertarians will say this is where gun control came from. They, a freed slave, man, they get access to their rights and they're going to be voting. And they actually didn't, vote in some black congressmen. And they had that's what these uppity Negroes coming around kind of talking. We got white sheets and pointy hats and stuff. And I'm going, so then here comes gun control. They're going, no. You don't have just a right to defend yourself. Hell no. When we're doing a good lynching, we don't want to get our friend Bubba shot. All right? So what do? They make it to where the sheriff gets to determine who gets to have a gun and not. Guess who don't get to have guns? I see gun control as a racist policy. All right? In my opinion. So then you go, then it's 4 million people in the U.S. enslaved that was determined by somebody. Okay, where'd that number come
from? By Professor Edward Baptist.
So he's putting a number at 4 million.
At 4 million in 1860.
Okay, so we got, 4 million. So we're operating from there. It started off, 400,000 made it. We got people born here. So we're dealing with a 4 million enslaved and their descendants. So now we're talking about retribution or what do you call it? What's the term for paying off? I forgot the term for the Japanese. What did they call that?
Reparations.
So reparations for being a slave and have slave blood, or for being black. Because I need to know the line here.
Going, well, yeah. we can start with the law. Depending on how far back you want to go. I mean, one thing about racism in America is that it has been codified in legislation for years. So we could start with looking at the law. I mean, again, you can go to Plessy.
Okay, so no, we're past slavery. See, this is one thing I wanted to make sure we get clear, is that it is a systemic thing that has propagated even since, you know, slavery and now it's kind of overlapped in. You don't have to have slave blood in you. Just being black, you were disadvantaged because of, and I'm black. I mean, is that where you're going, or are you limiting it to slaves and their blood?
Hang on a second. Let me drop this. There we go. Okay.
You understand my question?
Yeah. So the answer to your question now would be we can look at the census, and we can look at how are people determined as African American in the census. I mean, there again, Ernest, there are a number of ways that this question can be answered. It's not higher math.
No, see, okay, I want to make this one, tell you this 30-second story, and you'll kind of see how we got to know, because Carla Garrick is, until recently, the head of the Free State Project, which is an effort to move libertarians to New Hampshire, blah, 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 doesn't matter. They've been there over a decade. They get 5,000, you know, people. They trigger, they're going to, they commit, 20,000 commit that they're going to move, and then 5 years they got to move, and they go, okay? So she, once that triggered, she stepped down and, you know, having fun. What was interesting is she's an attorney from South Africa. She's white, you know, I think she has German, whatever. Her name's Garrick, so whatever that is. Well, the thing is that she's a South African white attorney. When the census comes in, you'll check your descendant nationality. Yep, African American. Okay, I'm African American. That's not the question they're asking. They want to know if you're black or minority or how much percent. It's just, to me, it's a stupid question. I never answer it. Kiss my butt. I don't care. Okay.
So okay.
So the thing is that if you have African American, you check the box and you're white, does that count? No, it's a black thing. So I'm going, okay, so if it's slavery, is it descendants of slaves? Or is it, well, you happen to be black,
For the sake of this conversation, we will use the number of 14 million based upon the U.S. Census that was taken the last time the census was taken.
14 million of what?
Wait a minute. There are 14 million African Americans in this country.
That's it? I thought it'd be more than that. Okay, so 14...
I don't know.
14.5 million... black.
I mean, look. I mean,
but that's not descendants of slaves. I mean, so you're just lumping in, if you got black blood in you, you're disadvantaged because you're black, because of the slave thing. See, I just need to know that's, you know, we're getting numbers here, and I want to make...
I'm sorry. I was confusing. I'm sorry. I was confusing percentage with numbers. Mm. It's 14%. It is 41. We'll say 42 million. It's 14%.
Okay.
I was confusing percentages and
that's fine.
And,
so you got 42 million that we had. We had 12.5 million leave Africa in chains, 400,000 make it to the U.S., 42 million black Americans, or 42 million that are descendants of the slaves?
Well, over 90% of those 41 million people are descendants of slaves.
Okay, well, I'm just wondering, you know, that 10%, do they get reparation too? You know,
yes.
So it's a black thing.
The United States.
Okay, black lives matter more. We'll be right back.
FoodForLiberty.com sells high quality.
Okay, this is, you know, because to keep the principle, I want to keep the principle tight. What is the principle we're going after? And if we not clear on this, then we lose the principle, you know?
But here's where I think your logic is breaking down. And that
I'm not even making any logic. I'm just trying to get the numbers.
Well, I wasn't gonna insult you by saying that. I'm kidding. No, is that once slavery ended, that doesn't mean that the oppression ended with it.
Okay, no. See, this is my point. We gotta make it clear. Okay. It's not, you know, they have all the slaves and descendants of slaves, and they were disadvantaged because and everything. And a guy raises his hand. He goes, "Hey, man, I'm black because I'm disadvantaged." All right, well, come on in. Well, you too. It's like keep adding initials after the gay thing all the time. You know, it's right. LGBTQ. You know, Z.
EIEIO.
You know, so I'm going, I'm just wondering who keeps getting added in and why. So this is, I'm not judging, I'm just wanting to know, you know. And that's why I was so excited to talk to you again, because you're on the leading edge of this. I got to write the word down. What is it?
Reparation.
Okay, so I'm going, when you have reparations as an issue, I'm like, All right, let's talk about it. And then it kind of, you know, I want to know who's included. You know, I want to know who I'm supposed to be checking my white privilege for, you know? So this is, and that's another, I am, you know, especially to a libertarian sensibility, this whole, you know, they universities put them in their white timeout room, you know, or check your privilege or doing, then you got the NAACP check is white. I mean, you know, and then doing this, you know, she's speaking in South Africa and she said, my trans racial efforts or something like that. I'm going, wow, when does it stop? So we need to be clear on this. Yeah, I just want to make sure, you know, what group we're talking about. Then we can get into the damage. So you're wanting to include, if you are... See, that's another thing. It goes into what shade of... How much black do you have to have in? Is it a feature thing? Is it an appearance? Is it a shade of skin? Is it a DNA thing? I'm just... At what point does it stop?
Well... I think I can answer that
okay,
part of the
well,
question.
We'll do that for the air because that's a good question. Okay. Let me go. You know, I'll just remind myself shade. Yeah, you can see why I thought this would be an interesting conversation. I'm not making a determination. I just want to know.
I appreciate your sincere interest in having it.
Well, this is what I do when I first started doing radio. It would be 2 hours every day on a controversial issue like this, you know, abortion, Federal Reserve, education, you know, Social Security, Medicaid, I mean, you know, whatever. And we just do it. And I get, you know, one or two experts on and we're going to get learnified, you know, and I've never done this. And I'm just going, yeah. I want to know what's going on because I tell you, we got so many other bigger problems right now. The government too big to give you everything you want. It's big enough to take everything you got. And I'm feeling they're in the taking everything I got thing, you know. And I just, I'm not feeling, I think we're all equally enslaved. Misery doesn't like company, you know. All right, here we're coming back.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with the chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock. We're having a good time. We're getting... certified on reparations. I got to write that down, man. I keep forgetting the word. Okay, reparations. You know, the definition of reparation is, I don't know what, make you whole. You know, pay you. That, you know, libertarians are big on reparations. We're going, look, I don't need the guy that robbed me, broke my thing, stole my whatever, beat me up. I don't need him sitting in jail. I want him out working, give me reparations. go make me whole, man. Just serving time and, you know, paying fees to the court don't do me squat. So here in Arizona, there's, you know, reparations, you know, in lots of legislation. So this is, and victims' rights, you know, victims get to, hey, man, don't be making a deal with this scumbag that's going to go out. I had his snarling, drooling face over mine as he pounded and did and whatever, and kind of, you know, no, we need to have some say. So the reparations, the victims get to have some say and some, you know, closure and some money. But I'm going, you know, where's that come from? And the professor would say, well, the government, you know, the government's out of my freaking pocket, man. You know, the government. So I'm just going, all right, so am I to pay because I'm not black? I'm not oppressed. I'm advantaged. I got to balance the scales. And for how long? Is this a continuing payment? You know, so all of this we need to know, but we got to find out who we're talking about. So I want the professor to help me with, all right, we're not talking about just slaves. Now, of course, all the slaves are dead for, you know, all we know. But they're descendants. So we have descendants. Well, what number does that come up to? We haven't even really got to that number. What we're looking at is 14% of the population is, I don't know, I can see African-American. I can't get past that crap. You're black. Or you're not, or you're have to take, and then it's getting in my generation. You know, I was born in 61. It was, you know, segregation, and, you know, and then we get the busing, and then generations, and certainly in the last decade or so, the young PDA just don't care. It's not an issue. So now we're looking at what? We're looking at 42 million Americans are considered black or. I'm wondering, they're saying they're disadvantaged. They need reparations also. All right, what's the line? 16th? You know, like they say, you're 16th of your grandfather's grandfather or something was a slave or Native American. You get benefit and you're part of the tribe of whatever. I just need to know what the criteria is. It a facial features? Is it a skin tone?
We'll just use the classification. And for the sake of this conversation, we'll use the classification of the census.
See, that's one thing. It's like Carla, she put in African-American. All right, give me my goodies.
I want my
affirmative
that's
action. I'm female, African-American. I want all my goodies. They go, no. It's not really because you're African-American. You're not black enough. And I'm going, well, then what's the question? I mean, what's the criteria?
I just gave you the answer.
She gets benefits.
Yeah, that's one person out of 47
million. All right, I'm just wanting to know. Okay, so we're going to go by somebody checks a box. Is there any, I don't know, credentials they need for checking that box, or I can just start checking the box?
In fact, for the sake of this conversation today, we will use the data from the last census.
All right.
That way we know that the number's pretty good because, for the most part, white folks are not going to consider themselves to be African American.
All right. Unless you're from Africa.
Unless you're from South Africa and you're crazy.
Okay. So let's go. Well, she left Africa. I mean, you know, South Africa. She didn't want to be. She wanted to be more freedom. All right. So now we're going from census and we have 42 million Americans that have identified as African-American. So I don't like, what is the term? You know, so I hate saying Africa. A good example, we have a naturopath that comes on talking about, you know, being politically correct and saying the right thing. He goes, look, that is not correct. I mean, you have all kinds of different variations of genetics for diseases and medicines and, you know, hell, you know, if you take vaccines and you're a young black man, you're four times more likely to get autism. You know, Nation of Islam is up in arms. I'm like, oh, hell no. The man's making us, you know, sick. So I'm going, all right, black is accurate. I'm wondering what you would think the community should be designated African American because that's what's on the U.S. Census.
No, I'm not going to think so much of my be so presumptuous to say that I know how to define an entire culture. I prefer African American because I, for example, know that 60% of my DNA comes from Cameroon. So, okay. So that's how I classify myself. And I'll leave the classification of others to others.
Okay, so for, like you say, the sake of this argument, we're mm-hmm. talking about, you know, they made this designation African-American little box for whatever. That'll change because that's just stupid. They eventually decades go by and they change it because it's stupid. But you have African-American marked, and that's the 42 million that we're talking about that are disadvantaged because of slavery.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So we got a number. All right. So 42 million. And it's because they checked that box, and it's because there is disadvantage to being black in America because of our policies before that instituted racism.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now we go forward and we say, all right, well, there's some address into this. You have civil rights stuff, and you got it. And I'm wondering if there's something that balances that on the other side, like affirmative action or quotas or even welfare or some. I'm wondering, anything, does that get subtracted from the total, whatever it is?
No. First of all, the indignities, the lives lost, the dramatic impact that it has had on the culture, that can never be balanced. And I don't think that balance is what is being sought here. What is being sought here is the fundamental premise, is the fundamental premise of making amends for crimes committed. And until that happens, because that's what a reparation is. A reparation is making amends for a wrong that has been committed.
You know, I want to make the amends thing. I want to inject this. I want to get some acknowledgement of this. You know, I don't think it diminishes your argument by me making this statement. I believe, as someone that grew up in Central Florida, that I was deprived of, you know, a lot of cultural advantage and closeness with friends. And I remember after the busing started, you know, you get your little school pictures and so on, you bring them home, and this is my boyfriend, and this is my boyfriend, and this is my boyfriend, my sister doing that, and a couple of them were black. And my parents kind of going, what do you mean, your boy? She's like, she had 20 boyfriends, you know? And I'm just not sure that, you know, what do you mean, kind of, I'm going, you know, wow, I looked at it and I saw that we are victims too, maybe not to the same degree. I don't want to make that, but to kind of like somehow I benefited from this racism. I don't feel I benefited. How am I reparated?
That's for you to figure out.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't understand how the explanation that you just gave is anywhere close related to what it is we started out talking
to about. Say it's zero is to diminish the black community. To say that we're not diminished by not having access to jazz and Motown and a lot of things that I benefited from the black culture is that, you know, especially in Florida, there was, you know, the parties are different. The, you know, it's like having the Hispanic culture here in Arizona. You know, my youngest daughter is married to a Hispanic gentleman, and his family and everything. Cinco de Mayo, I get an extra holiday. Yeehaw! I mean, you know, so I don't want it to diminish your argument by saying that somehow I'm not harmed or the community at large isn't harmed by racism.
The larger community has definitely
okay,
been harmed.
Thank you. Yeah. I just need something. You know, I'd do
okay,
something.
Now I understand your point.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Love is but a song we sing, fears that we will die. You can make the mountains ring or make the angels cry. Though the bird is on the wing and you may not know why. Come on, people now, smile on your brother, everybody get together.
this issue is only going to be fixed with culture. Now, that may manifest itself in some law and reparation and this and that and so on, but that's not where the fix is going to be. You know, it's just going to be a sense of justice and balance, and we kind of, you know, and it's fixed. And I mean, so to have it fixed, there has to be a recognition of the diminishment of our lives as not black Americans because of this racism. I don't see the content or the character. This is not so. We got to get through this, and then I just need to know who we're talking about. All right, so somehow the government, you would say, but me, my grandchildren in debt, what the heck, pile on some more. They got $20 trillion in debt. Might as well just, print up the printing press and we'll kind of, redistribute some more. I mean, what the heck? So I'm going, okay, how are we going to do that? Well, we got to find out who first. Well, diminished, as Americans here, yeah, black. You know what I'm going? Okay, well, what about Middle Eastern, Hispanic? Sure as hell, Native Americans. So I'm once it starts, where does it stop? Not that it needs to stop. I mean, heck, do what Iceland did and just dissolve the whole freaking government and said, bankers, we owe who what? That was that old government. We started over, man. So, that could always be the Trump on this thing is that, boom, play that card, we're just starting over. Which we may wind up having to do anyway. So I'm going, okay, so now we're talking about, for lack of a better number, 42 million that designated on the U.S. government form census as African American. All right, so we're going to do reparations there. And then everybody else, that's not what we're talking about. That's not what the law says, not what we want to do because it's not what we want to do or what the professor wants to do. So we're going to go ahead and focus on that. Now, whatever precedent we set on how we determine what is due, be careful because it's going to go across the board on everything else too. So let's go ahead and start with that, Professor. What's the metric that you would use to determine a dollar amount?
Well, again, going back to Edward Baptist's book, we can look at we can actually calculate how slavery made American capitalism. We can come up with a number that is a fairly good estimate of what the value of slavery was to making this country to what it is today. The same way that I said, starting using Georgetown's example, you can look at those 200 slaves, where Georgetown was financially at the time, and you can see now that it has a $1.5 billion endowment, we can do some projections of value. That's already been done.
That's a good case to where you have a university built literally on the lives of slaves, and that's
you have a country built on the lives of slaves.
Yeah, see, this is where you and I, I got to get some kind of, acknowledgement of the diminished value that we get in our economy, and I don't have my Jetson flying car now because of, a century of, racism and depression of races and slavery and whatever, and that we are not being innovative in the industrial age and we're on the backs of the exploited, yada, yada, yada. I mean, I am, if we don't acknowledge that, I don't think we're being accurate. You keep saying that capitalism benefited from, yeah, in some ways, maybe for a short period. In the long run, I don't think we did. I really don't.
Well, again, all I can do, I mean, that's your opinion, and I respect your opinion, but when I look at the data tells me different. The data tells me that
we would
not be...
You don't ever get data on what might have been. You don't ever get data on what should have happened.
No. The data shows us the value that free labor provided, the increased value that free labor provided, and what happened to the cost of a bale of cotton? What happened to how U.S. Steel was able to become more profitable through the convict leasing program? For there you go to the other, what is his book? Slavery by Another Name, to show how U.S. corporations once slavery was allegedly abolished with
they,
the 14th,
they just brought in the, chain
the 13th gangs. Amendment. How exactly? So again, these numbers are there. We know what the numbers are.
You're helping me make my point. My point is that, you know, slavery and certainly in the cotton industry, there is no way human beings could keep up with a combine. That's just not going to happen. Okay, so I don't care how cheap they are. Heck, just to feed them, you know, is more than just running the damn combine. So my thing is technology is what kept, you know, away from me this technology to improve and to free more people because there was enslavement. I don't see that as a long-term economical.
You're talking about what brought about the end of slavery, not the profitability that existed during slavery.
Right, and my point is that would have came sooner. You know, we would have more innovation if we didn't see individual human beings as beasts of burden. I mean, you know, we would be better off. I think, you know, heck, we'd had robots in 1920s. Hell, that's what Metropolis, the movie, was all about. So I'm just going, this is, so I want that acknowledged. I mean, just that, because if you don't acknowledge that, you're diminishing the human lives that weren't enslaved, that didn't benefit from the relationship with those that were enslaved.
I won't deny that. And at the point that you are able to quantify that, then okay. But I'll give you that.
Okay. Thank you, because I think it diminishes black lives more to make it though that they have to have some kind of reparation to be, you know, elevated as, you know, more human or something, and that it diminishes their humanity.
That's not what the basis of reparations is.
I understand it's a, you know, balanced justice kind of thing, but there's also something diminished from me due to bigotry and racism. To not acknowledge that is like
I'll give you that as well.
Okay, thank you. So now we're doing dollar amounts, and we're going, okay, well, because you go and say, capitalism and the capital and everything you had and what all that we got was built on the backs of slaves. And I'm saying we'd have a lot more if there weren't the backs of slaves. That's my point.
Well, I don't know, because when you look at the railroads in the South were built, if you, again, you look at the steel
industry.
And
the Chinese in the West Coast.
Well, yeah, I understand that. But we're
I don't think they felt any less enslaved. You know what I mean?
Okay. I don't understand your question or your point.
No, I'm wanting to get down now to the economics of it, how you would determine it, and you're looking at, well, they made a bunch of money, so we need to get a cut of it. And I'm going, because they made a bunch of money, that's not a good enough reason for me. Or how much I'm saying they didn't make enough. Our society was not benefited by this practice. I don't think we benefited at all, certainly in the long run. Some individual scumbags did, you know. So now I'm going, okay, so looking at how much money they made or what Apple's worth is not the basis for reparations. I'm looking, there has to be damage that they had. It goes to, you know, the life is diminished in some way.
Do we debate the damage that damage incurred and is incurring and is existing to this day?
Yeah, because see, to say, look how much money they made, you know, I need some. It's like Al Sharpton going down shaking down everybody. And I'm going, no. You want to have a dollar amount. I need to know how the individual was down. Reparations for them, not punitive damages on capitalism in general, which is what seems is happening.
No.
Yeah, we're at the end of the hour. See, we're going to keep doing this. We're going to go ahead and go a little bit into the archive. You guys do see how you can see why I need the hours. But we got, you know, the definition. This will go next time. We're going to do this again because we hadn't even gotten to the house.
I'll be more than happy.
Okay, let's do it. Donna, you know, next week when we'll get set up, because we haven't even got into the how we determine the dollar.
And now that I know that this is where you want to go, I'll be ready.
Yeah, this is awesome. This is awesome. You know, because I want to know how we determine dollar amount, not just punish capitalism. That ain't going to do you any good.
All right.
The Free State Project has...
Thanks, Ernest.
Okay, yeah, we're good. We'll do that because we can pick it up. Okay. I can, you know, summarize this real quick with make sure you keep this card in the file and include it the next time we do it because I got a bunch of notes on here. So we'll go ahead and kind of summarize this, and then we'll come back with, all right, now we're determining the damage to that individual. But to make a claim of, you know, they made a bunch, capitalism is a bunch, and they just should give us a cut. You know, how do you determine that and why? And then you start opening it up for 15 gazillion others. I need to know an individual is damaged with some stat that you're using for something.
Okay.
All right, cool. Hey, thanks. Wait, hold on. She wants to talk to you. What?
Okay.
Wednesday the 3rd.
Okay. All right. Hour 2 and 3, next Wednesday the 3rd.
Let me look at my calendar here.
That's at 10 to noon Eastern.
Wednesday the 3rd. And wait a minute, and I got a real crazy schedule next week, so hang on a second. They're asking me to sit in and do some shows during the week. So, the 9th, the 11th. No, I can't do the 3rd because I'll be on Sirius XM for 3 hours from 10.
Okay. Well, go ahead and Dono communicate
with
you.
I have to figure out. There's a real crazy schedule next week.
Well, it could be the following week. That's fine.
Okay. Let me figure that out, and then have Donna give me a call.
Yeah, she's going to send you something, remind you when you got it figured, right. And we'll do it. Because we just got up to the good part.
Okay.
Well, you know, gotcha. as good part. Okay.
Gotcha.
All right. Thank you, sir. Thanks. That was fun. We'll do it again soon.
Have a good day.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.